Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event.
Alright, welcome to the State of Games, a proud member of the Punchboard Media Content Network. I'm Dice Hate Me.
I'm Get Louder.
I'm Puppy Shogun.
And we are a podcast all about anything and everything related to board and card games and more. So, welcome to episode 177, or as we like to call it, the one about the main event.
Main event!
Yes, let's get ready to rumble.
That's right, you need more pizzazz.
I do, a little bit. It's the NPR, main event. Let's get ready to rumble.
Yes.
So this topic,
we're gonna rumble in the streets tonight.
This topic came to us from a conversation TC and I were having about games that often take 3 or more hours to play, event games in other words, and how there can sometimes be a stigma about that in the hobby lately. But really, it's a way for TC to talk extensively about my father's work while Daryl and I just listen.
Yeah, and there's no stigma. It's perfectly good, and you should embrace these games.
We're gonna get to that. Just hold on.
No, they're awesome. Okay. They're really good.
Chris, remember when you and I designed games and we would let TC in on like every step of the process and it wasn't like having to ask. It was like, oh, TC, guess what? Look at this. Let's play it. You want to try play testing how it is right now? Let's do that. Ah! And then TC is just like, Beta, can I get it? TC, are you there? Just let me know if you're breathing.
he likes to work in silence and private. Apparently this game has been playtested, but it's, you know, we just have to take his word for it.
And that's true.
I don't think I could trust it, because I playtested the hell out of Viva Job, and that game's fantastic, so clearly it doesn't have my help.
It does not have Daryl's seal of approval. All right, well, we'll get to that in just a few minutes in the meat of the podcast. Before we do all that, before we get into ribbing and everything else, what has everybody been doing lately? Daryl, anything? You're cooking some meat right now. That's all I know.
I am cooking some meat right now. So if you hear me quiet for a minute or two randomly throughout the podcast, it's because I'm out checking the smoker. Still kind of moving into St. Louis, getting set up. I've been to a Blues hockey game. Then I flew back to Jersey a little bit ago for visiting a friend who lost a family member. So I was kind of helping him through that. And then while there, we took in a Yankees game, which was really cool because you had to prove that you were vaccinated to get into the game.
Oh, wow.
So it was like, wow, cool. Everyone still had to wear masks and stuff, and everything was still socially distanced, but it was wild. And we got in the douche section of the stadium.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
So, yeah, it was like Yankee fans have always been like, I've been a couple games at Yankee Stadium. I'm not a Yankees fan, never been a Yankees fan, but I respect the team because they're good. And every time I've been to Yankee Stadium previously to this, the fans have always been like, their team's the best, blah, blah, and they'll go to their team. But this time, they were chanting F the Yankees, they were booing their own players. I'm sitting there like, looking around like, am I in Philly? I don't get what's going on.
Yeah, so. I was going to say, as a Philadelphia fan, man, you should be used to that. Tenfold.
It's weird though to see them wearing, you know, Posada jerseys and whatnot, and then just bashing their own team. I'm like, I have no idea what's going on. So it was great. So that was that. I did pick up Red Rising, and my intention was to play it before the podcast, and I failed all of you. I'm sorry.
Everyone out there in podcast land, yes, he has failed.
But I will have a review for the solo version at the next podcast when that's like 6 months out. So,
hey, we have done back-to-back-to-back podcasts this year. We've had pretty good success rate. This is within a month of our last podcast.
Yeah, but that's by sheer will. Force
exactly.
Of will.
Force of will. TC, have you been doing anything?
I haven't done so much. I got my Quest 2, which I don't know if I even talked about on the last
time. No, you did not. You didn't have it last time.
Yeah, so I'm in the virtual world now. Mm-hmm. So I don't even function in the real world anymore. So, you know, it's like, it's a very positive place. Me and my virtual friends hanging out in my virtual McDonald's and my virtual places.
It is it is really funny because, like, I'll hear him talking off in the distance and I'm like, who's he talking to? And then I realize, oh, he's in his little virtual chat room chatting up with people.
I'm like, hey, what's up? What's going on? Oh, that's cool. That's a cute otter. All right.
Oh, that's right. You're like in Otterland or whatever.
Yeah, there's like an otter world. It's like, oh man, yeah, those are cute otter. All right, cool. We'll hang out. We'll be in otter world. It was AWWTER.
Otter.
Yeah.
Nice. Of course it was.
It was great. But yeah, I've been in the virtual world. I the VR is good now. It really is. Like the fact that I'm not plugged into anything, and it's you know, you have your Beat Sabers and everything, but like I really like the games where you like do puzzles or just anything where I'm not making myself super sick.
Right. Yeah.
Because I was playing. There's the Walking Dead game that's really cool. But it makes me really sick after a while, and that sucks. the motion sickness. And I think I'm getting used to it, but like still, like at first, man, it just zapped me of energy. I was just...
Well, because you're actually napping. Up doing stuff, yeah.
Yeah. And then I had to stand up.
Well, it makes you sweat, too, like that climbing game that I tried on there. Like, I mean, there's no reason it should make you sweat, but it makes you sweat because you feel like you're literally hanging for your life by your fingertips.
You're like, my arms hurt.
Yeah, exactly, because you're just moving up and down with your arms and you're trying to climb.
What a cliff face that I've finally beaten. Yeah, like, exactly. Man, I'm ready.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready to take on that free climb on my own in real life now.
It's so ridiculous. But it does that. It takes the bottom out of your stomach. It changes your like balance. It's very interesting. And yeah, it's now is the time to actually, you could entertain buying one because they're at a point where it's like, it's reasonable to buy one. And it also is good.
Yeah.
As opposed to being seasick all the time.
Mm-hmm. There was that VR rig that Adam with KickTrack has that we did. Oh, yeah. Columbus. Mm-hmm. And he had one where you open and walk out a door and all of a sudden you're standing on the edge of a skyscraper and you're just like, whoa, yep. Oh! Yeah. And all of a sudden it was the weirdest thing because all of a sudden you feel cold and you feel wind even though none of that's really there. Just like, oh crap.
Yeah, that's the one where you can put things on the end of the plank like a cake or whatever to
yeah.
taunt you to go out to the end. Yeah. That one's freaky. But yeah, it's pretty amazing, and the Oculus is cool because you're right, you're not tethered to anything anymore. Like with Adam's rig, you still have a cord in the back, you're tethered, but the Oculus is completely wireless.
Yeah, and you know, the government knows everything about our house.
Oh my god, it knows the entire layout of the house, so they know how to rate us, I guess.
When they scan your eyes, it has your retinal scan.
It has my retinal scan. It's got everything that I could possibly want. So it's got all the positives and all the negatives that we all love. It's really cool. I love the fact that I can just tap on the side and then I can just walk around. That's one of the things that mm-hmm. like the other VR sets I'm not used to. The fact that I just go boom and all of a sudden I can see.
Yeah, it's freaky. I mean, it's like looking through a 1992 potato phone or whatever.
Yeah,
but you can still see.
But still see, which is neat. The other thing, which we'll get into, is I played one game.
You did.
I played a real game in real life. And that was cool. And I was trying to think. The other thing that we did was Chris was very nice to help out. And we filmed promos for my father's work,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know if one's today. Whatever. We're recording on like Wednesday night.
Yeah.
So like by the time
this is live, it'll probably be live.
Yeah. Yeah. There'll probably be at least one promo short live and there'll be more promos coming. And it came together pretty well in the sense that like it's terrible and awesome at the same time, and I don't feel any cringy. I don't feel cringy at all watching it, which is great. So excellent musical stings, excellent
it looks
excellent
great.
Acting.
I mean, no, I wouldn't go that far. But
Chris did a great job.
I do a great job playing a dead person. I was born for that role. Yes,
it's very funny. And that was cool. But it's been a while, so I got actual LED lights a while back, and so I finally got a chance to use them.
Yeah, and it's not. It actually turned out really, really well.
Yep, green screen for the first time I've ever used green screen.
If anybody out there hears a bunch of crunching and stuff, Daryl's got chocolate milky
pretzels. Jesus, you can really hear it? I'm
sorry. Yes, we can hear everything you're doing. It's all right. I just want everybody to get like the ambiance so they can imagine you've got really salty, milky chocolate pretzels.
It's a weird habit. And whenever I smoke, I get snacky. Smoke meat. Smoke on the grill.
Whenever I smoke.
Nice.
Well, that too. But yeah.
It's 4:21, Daryl.
It's 4:21. You missed your joke. You missed the window. Well, we can jump in because we'll talk about the real game that you played with us. But real quick, I'll just mention that I recently bought X-Men Mutant Insurrection, and that is the Richard Launius joint, which is a co-design with Brandon Perdue. This is one that we got kind of a little bit of a sneak peek when we were at Lonnie's house at one point. We didn't get a chance to play, but he described the gameplay to us. And I don't know. I was just out at Atomic Empire and thought, why not? I'll just pick it up. So basically, it's a lot of people have been describing it. I even read a quick review before I picked it up where somebody said that it was essentially like, you know, Elder Sign. And I'm like, okay, Elder Sign with mutants. Cool. I'll play that. And it does have a bit of the pedigree of Elder Sign in it. But essentially what you're doing is you can play solo, which I did solo play as two different other mutants. I played, first of all, Wolverine and Kitty Pryde as a team. And so you can split up and go to different locations, you know, trying to accomplish these kind of crises that pop up with other mutants, you know, evil mutants and things that come about during the game. And you're trying to basically accomplish a certain set of roles, just like in Elder Sign. But it has a little bit more of the pedigree of Doctor Who, which is the one that was put out by Gale Force.
Okay.
So, and it's over on the shelf behind you, but so Doctor Who has instances where you have to accomplish, again, a set of tasks using dice, custom dice, but you can also have companions. And in the same instance of this, you have your own kind of companion card, which is just yourself, but you can lend help to somebody else. And so you can mix and match so that if someone is deficient in a certain type of die roll, you could lend your card to them and they get that to their pool, and it actually helps them to then succeed in their... Oh, and of course, the means of things.
Did I miss the Doctor Who thing? Was that one... Is that Alanius one too?
No, that was one that actually, you know, we played it with him. And I think this was the trip before you came with us. But we played Doctor Who with him at that time, and he was developing this, and he said, I love this kind of system. And so he took that and I think it tweaked it and improved it a little bit upon it because it works slightly smoother. The game is still... Difficulty is pretty tough. The Doctor Who game difficulty is just insane. But the Mutant Insurrection one is fun. It's again, breezy. I think the challenge worked out pretty well. I still lost my first game of it. If you happen to lose your team, which I did, so Wolverine and Kitty Pryde died off. But then I went and recruited Storm and Forge. And each individual mutant's got their own abilities as well, and all the synergies of how they work together is pretty cool. And, you know, it's got that.
Don't they rest? They don't die, do they?
No, well, they don't die. They just have to go. They have to go back to to HQ, the mansion.
Okay.
And you know, recuperate, and then other team members.
Yeah,
they'll recuperate, and then another team member will take over for them.
Wolverine's too tired.
Wolverine is exhausted. Yeah, I don't think Wolverine is actually ever going to die, but. Anyway, I'll talk more about that because I'll be probably playing it. Matter of fact, when we go to Lonnie's house not too long, we'll probably play it when we're there too. So I recommend it if you're a fan of the X-Men and you like the gameplay of Elder Sign. If you ever played Doctor Who and you like that kind of dice pool structure that is built into that, it's really fun. And then on a whim, again, I was at Atomic one day and I was like, I saw Cryo, and that's new from Z-Man, and that is a design from Tom Jolly and Luke Laurie.
Yep.
Yeah, and so Luke was the designer of Manhattan Project Energy Empire.
There you
is
go.
That correct? Yeah. Yes. I was trying to get the title correct.
And we still might get it wrong, because like, it's like energy, and I always get the next part.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's energy something, and I think it's energy.
Energy Empire, yeah.
And very, very... What I can say about this is that, since I was playing, is like, you can see both designers directly in this game almost immediately... Do you go, oh, that was designed by Tom and that was designed by Luke?
Right.
They got together.
Yeah, they sure did. It's just funny because it's like, you can see, and to be honest with you, it was mostly like Luke, but then there was a couple things I'm like, yep, that is pure Tom Jolly. He's just poking his little gotcha head in there. Little things that make you go, "What? Wait, why did that just happen? Why did I have to do that?" Cryo's cool. I don't. Do you want to talk about the gameplay? Since I'm rambling.
Hey,
about
yeah, for the first time, because I haven't played a game in a long time. Yeah, so Cryo is a game where you crash land on a planet, and everybody for some reason was just asleep in cryo chambers,
right? Right.
And they're just like scattered, like pieces of the ship is scattered in different places. And so until you can get to rescue, pitch black style, mm-hmm. although pitch black style in the sense that you are actually safe underground.
Right, right, that's true.
When yeah. the night comes.
Yeah.
So basically you're trying to, before the night comes, get underground into these caves so that you can survive. And then hopefully, I guess, get help. I don't know if there's like a backstory that goes any further than
honestly,
that.
Honestly, I don't. I think they're just going to wait until they are rescued. But yeah, at least they're safe from the freezing temperatures above or whatever, the tundra that's going to happen. The mini ice age.
Is it a mini ice age? Okay, yeah. I just assumed. I was just going with pitch black, so it's like Chronicles of Riddick style.
Yeah.
Like,
well, that's what it felt like to me.
The creatures are going to get you.
Yeah, right? Something.
So we just played that way. Creatures are going to get you. But the issue is, you've got to try to get as many of the people, which is also kind of funny because it's resource management. So the people, you're just leaving people. You're just like, eh, not worth my time. That person's dead.
Yeah.
But you take and also use whatever. I'll go back to that. But yeah, you grab the cryo people and from the cryo chambers in these little like cool little plastic things and you take them underground. And the idea for some reason is that you need area control over these different areas of the cave.
Yeah, that kind of portion is kind of the story's a little mudgy, but it's it was sabotaged. The ship was sabotaged, so there's different factions that they don't know who to trust.
Okay, so they don't know who to trust.
Right.
All right. Yeah. So yeah, so you don't know who to trust, so area control underground.
Right.
But
like you do.
Yeah. And I guess well, no, I'm saying that incorrectly. Sorry. Region area majority.
Area majority. Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, be
area,
appropriate.
Region majority.
Yes.
I don't want to get that wrong. I don't want people to call me out on it. So, yeah. Anyway, so the basic idea of the game is worker placement. You're going to place your drone. Again, don't know why, but I assume we're the robotic systems of the thing.
Probably, yes.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
But you place drones on different actions. The drones actually are adjacent to multiple actions.
Mm-hmm.
And you choose one of those actions it's adjacent to and take that action. For me, that wasn't necessarily a selling point of the game. It just sort of worked as intended.
Right.
And and so things you can do is you can take the cryo chambers and you can add them to your
tableau.
Yeah,
it's like what they call the deck or something like that, but it's your tableau. Basically they're adding all these different actions to.
Yeah, so you can add them to your tableau, you can put them onto vehicles and then try to get them underground, right? That's the basic flow of things,
right?
But the cards that you get in the game equal different types of vehicles, or they equal different, you can trash them for resources, or you can place them at the top, which will grant you
special ability. Yeah.
Right? And that's a permanent special ability. You can have up to three different types of special abilities, three different types of vehicles. The vehicles, you don't have to have them as a different color, but it can just be whatever. And then you send them underground one time, and then they disappear?
They kind of wear themselves out, getting out down in the ground, so you have to build them again. The other thing you do with the cards is it can be three missions, which are your secret
objectives. And so there is also a mission text on the cards. Mm-hmm. So they are a little bit overwhelming at first, but the cool part about it is that there's only like six types. So once you know...
Yeah, there's like six or seven. Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah.
Once you know the different suits and what they do, after our first game, you've kind of got it. I'm not going to go over each individual
thing.
No,
you don't have to do
that. I mean,
all that,
but the thing that's keeping you from not doing this is the fact that every now and then there will be like sabotage tokens that can come out. And so over the course of the game, cryo chambers will die off if you don't get them out. So this can be, if you're just being, it's not really to like punch each other in the face, but if you're being lazy, people can just be like, you're screwed.
Yeah, exactly. You got to be thinking about, because you could play this game cutthroat, Because as soon as one of those things come up,
you can play it cutthroat. But generally speaking, like unless you're like way ahead of everybody else doing the thing, like you're not. It's hard to be cutthroat because you get resources for not being cutthroat.
Exactly. You're incentivized to be good, but every now and then you're going to have to be bad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it sounds. I don't know if that doesn't sound like a lot. The only issue is that it's very opaque at first, right? You will just be like, I got to get these guys to a vehicle and get it down into the cave. That sounds reasonable, but like you've got resources that convert into other resources. I'm not explaining the other, like there's a resource there's other resource thing, and how you get them is by trading other resources for those. So everything is very incremental. And so when you're starting out, especially for, I feel like Lindsay, I felt bad for Lindsay a little bit because it's kind of like just, it's very opaque.
It's
like,
a lot going on and there's not anything like specific to concentrate on at first. But yeah, you're right. You're just like, you know, it, and thematic wise, they're like, okay, you do this thing, like you said, for some reason. Yeah. So whereas like she was saying, afterwards she was even saying like, you know, I told her this is like probably the heaviest thing that you've played to date. And she's like, well, what about Wingspan? I was like, no, Wingspan, no. I was like, at least Wingspan, you're like, okay, I get a bird does a thing, I build a nest, you know, it all makes sense. And whereas in Cryo, it's like, okay, I've done this one thing to do five things others. And one thing that I will say that is cool about the game that I really liked was, you mentioned gathering resources, but when you go to a spot, you mentioned it slightly, where you could take the thing that's at that spot, if you take that certain action, you could take this little chit at the spot, discard it for the thing that's on it, or add it to your tableau, which then when your drones return, so it's like, so this is the kind of Luke Laurie part where it's like the worker takement thing.
Yeah, it's the same thing as the Manhattan Project thing where you will have to take a turn to take your stuff back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in this case, they do the thing that I like, is which is when you take your stuff back, you get to do a bunch of things.
Exactly. It's cool because when you take your drones back, you can then decide in one of the six spots where they could dock. If you place tokens in the right spot, then you get certain things, like you said, energy like conversions to other things, or you get to draw a card for free or whatever, you know, but you actually get, like, especially if you wait till all your drones are out, you bring them all back, you get three actions that really set you up for other turns. So that part is really cool. Overall, I enjoyed it. I like the art style. The game does some interesting things. I don't know that it's doing anything technically quote unquote air quotes new.
What just reminded me that I need to also, like, yeah, it's not doing anything new, but it also reminded me that, like, I need to get back into playing board games again because I got testy towards the end because it was taking too long.
Yeah.
And, that's on me. Like, I sort of was like, oh, well, I know what's going to happen. And we had a thing which is always one of the difficult things in games is getting the ending right.
Yeah.
Like, when do you end the game? And this one, from what we played, felt like we went one turn too long.
Yeah.
But then reading the rules, we had to almost check it like three times and then double check.
Yeah, the end game was
again,
weird. Yeah.
100% for anybody that's writing, like, if it's a Euro game where you are competing in a race, make sure you know when your ending is. Just
exactly.
Be 100% clear. Say it three times in three different ways if you have to, because, like, the game ends in this case when the last sun token is taken and activated on a location on the board, but there's also a pile that it could be. So it's not guaranteed that something will happen.
It's but it was like, at that point, I was like, why would I wait? I would just go ahead and take that. But then I also got to take it at the end of my turn, which then ended the game immediately. So y'all didn't get to get an extra action. So I got it incentivized me to go ahead and just end the game, hoping that I had enough points, but also the fact that you didn't really get a chance. And then, of course, we had the mission stuff, and I got a really kind of cheaty mission that gave me a bunch of points.
It's one of those things, like, yeah, you know, playing it again, I mean, what would you do instead?
Right, exactly, know. Yeah.
I would play it again. I wouldn't necessarily seek this one out 100%, but, like, I'd be down for it. It's for, if you have played games like this before, if you're familiar with Manhattan Project, if you're familiar with, wow, that's a weird one to say, Eclipse.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know how you could really say, oh, if you're familiar, this will be a breeze. Well, if you are familiar with Eclipse, this is probably a breeze.
Like the tech tree stuff, but or like the moving things around.
But that part that you were saying with the tableau is pretty cool. Building your own combo is always fun. And the only downside for me is that it felt like it overstayed its welcome a little bit. And I don't know if that's because we had an extra turn.
Yeah.
Or if it was just like we had like... It felt like the game's going to play the same way every time, and I didn't like that feeling. So I'm mixed on it, but I think positive.
I think I'm mostly positive. I would definitely play it again, not just because I paid money for it, but I'd like to just try it one more time. But I do feel like the same way that you did, that it did last, I think, one turn longer than it should have, and it didn't quite end the way that I expected it would. And again, to be honest with you, I'm not even sure we ended it correctly, but
Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
And that's why I give it the benefit of the doubt. I would just say, and like, I got testy at the end, but I like these types of games. So right. I'm prone to like it. It's just, I will say though, put symbols to reinforce an action. When something says like stasis incubation action or something like that, I'm like scanning the board and there are texts for that.
Yeah.
And it's like, what action could that possibly be in this
You look up in the rules and you're like, this is what the stasis incubation or whatever the actual term is. It's not attributed to an actual icon. It's just a name for something. It's a thematic name for something.
Some name for something that I did on my turn and I don't have a player aid, so I don't know what this thing is.
That's true. It didn't come with a player
aid. You get plus one for that. I'm like, yes. This is great.
It does come with two player aids, which are pretty good, like on the side by side, like your turn sequence and like scoring and things like that. But as far as like you're mentioning that there are this terminology, it's like playing Netrunner without the lexicon.
It's nowhere near.
No, it's not like. But I mean,
there are like three or four moments where you're just like,
what does that mean?
What?
And it's all on the cards, too, and it relates to the special abilities that you get on there. So, but like I said, there's only...
That's just a nitpick. That's what I fight over all the time at my own development thing, is try to get symbols where it makes sense.
Yep. All right. Well, we can move off from Cryo. I recommend trying it out. Like with TC, I don't know that I can recommend necessarily buying it at this point. I did have fun. I did enjoy what we were doing in the game.
Yeah.
And I definitely want to, try it again. So that is...
Oh, well, ultimately, let me ask you, Chris.
Sure.
This or Zulkin? And I ask because the similarity of it went a turn too long, didn't end the way that you thought it would. You know, everything was flipped right at the end. And so I'm wondering if TC had a Zulkin experience.
No. And it wasn't so bad. Like, it definitely wasn't like... It didn't make me go like... Worst game I ever made.
Right.
It was a moment where I was just like, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. I guess I lose. Mm.
Yeah.
Lost anyway. I don't care. It's just the fact that, not really lose.
Yeah.
It was just a downer moment, and it really sucked because the rest of the game is really enjoyable. But again, like I said, it was nowhere near Zulkin. I can guarantee you that. My whole, there was no chance that every single action I'd taken turn during the game could be erased with one move. So yeah, there's that. I will just mention really quickly that I introduced Lindsay to another Roll and Write, which was Welcome To, which we've all played. Oh, yeah. And that's a pretty classic. I guess not rolling right, a flipping right. But and she took that one really well. And we, of course, if you have not played or seen Welcome To by now, if you like rolling right games, this is a flipping right, same thing. But definitely check this out because it has just every game is definitely way different for Welcome To.
So good.
Yeah, it's very, very good. It's a modern classic. And finally, I got a couple of Kickstarters in. I got Public Market from Talon Strikes, which I've not played yet. Of course,
is that the fish one?
The fish one, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's got some polyominoes and puzzly type instances in that. I'm very much looking forward to playing that one. But I also got Tentacle Town for Monster Fight Club, which is one that I backed right after Gen Con 2 years ago. Just got it. And this is...
I'm looking this up.
Yeah, look it up. This is designed by Aaron Dill and John Kowaleski. And they kind of sold me at Gen Con because they had giant tentacles in the booth, and they were just very energetic, and I liked the look of the tentacles. It had cool, you know, neat and cute artwork and things like that. So I got that, knowing that it would be a...
Those are some cool plastic tentacles.
Oh, the tentacles are awesome. Gameplay? No, not so much. I don't want to be too neg on it, but the problem is that this is in the history of playing games with Lindsay. This is the only time she's said, could we not play this anymore? So it's kind of a... She was like,
"Wow!"
She was like, "Are you going to be mad?"
Throw her under the bus.
Well, yeah. No. Because I would agree with her. Because trust me, I'm going to explain in a second.
You're just like, "Yeah, well, she just wanted it. It's not me.
It's not me. It's totally not.
It's not me." Publishers of Tentacle Town.
Right.
We'll take your promotional money.
No, it was funny because she was like, "Are you going to be like upset if we don't?" If we don't finish this game? And I was like, no. I was like, I totally understand. So the thing is, like, when we first started playing, I was like, this is neat. So it's, you know, very straightforward worker placement. You don't own the workers, though. They're just residents in the town. And you're essentially building houses in the town, which are yours, and you're trying to get area majority. So
such a clever idea.
Yeah, the components and the board and the dice and everything that came with the game is super great production. But so you're basically taking an action in one of the districts. You put a resident in the district, and then you can either build a house or do a task there. If you build a house, you could also do a task if you pay a gold. You could do additional tasks if you pay extra gold. And there's only like six different actions that are on the main board. Then you put out three cards that are additional actions you can do in the game. So very limited in the amount of what you can do in the game. And basically, it's the same thing. You're going to get in things. You convert those into other things. The twist of the game is that after you take that action in the district, you place a tentacle into one of the C space that's next to the district that you place your resident into. And then you roll as many dice, up to four, as many tentacle dice that are there. And then you do whatever it says on the dice. And what happens on the dice is either a resident runs away, in other words, goes to another district, a resident dies, a house is destroyed, or you add more tentacles, or nothing happens. And then the first 10 rounds, we didn't really... You can also go hunting tentacles. And when you do that, you have to spin harpoons. Then you spin the harpoon spinner. And then if you get a hit, you destroy the tentacle and you get gold and fame. And of course, fame is how you win the game. So you want to, you know, like a hunting strategy would be great. The problem is that you cannot produce harpoons fast enough. And so these tentacles are just building up and building up. And so there's 10 tentacles in the game. And of course, by like round 10 or 12, we had all the tentacles on the board. And so whenever we do an action in a district, if there's not enough tentacles to put on the board, you move a tentacle from one district to another to attack there. Buildings were dying off like crazy. You can try to save your buildings, but you have to have a harpoon in order to try to save your buildings. So then you don't have a harpoon to hunt with. Residents could die, and in the game, here's the main problem. The residents could die. There's 20 residents, and the game only ends when you run out of residents. Well, we played for a long time and still had half the residents left because they kept dying. Because we couldn't protect them because we didn't have enough harpoons, unless we missed something about, you know.
What. Yeah, that's the thing. Like when you said that, I was like, "There's got to be something that's missing from this."
You had to miss a rule.
No, We looked at the rules at least like 10 times, and Lindsay.
Maybe they didn't print them in the rules. maybe they made the mistake.
Possibly, but even Lindsay was like, give me that rule book. And so
maybe two players is bad for it. Maybe they forgot.
It's possible. It's possible that it plays better with more players because there's more of a chance that other players will try to defend residents and houses at that point.
Maybe at the start you were supposed to take away more villagers. Maybe it was only supposed to be 10.
Maybe. I mean, I'll look. Perhaps that's might be my fault. Maybe there's something I missed in the setup.
I'm just trying to get that sweet, sweet advertising money.
Well, you know what? I owe it, since y'all are saying there must be something I'm missing, I owe it to myself to go back and read over the rules and not write this off completely quite yet. Oh, wait, here's the rule book.
I think you should angrily write a BGG, like go on to Board Game Geek and angrily write a forum post about your play.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then
there's my father's work banners on BGG already.
Oh, is there?
Oh, really?
Wow. Oh, man. Oh, God. I got to check the I have to check the Ask Me Anything thread because it's probably...
Oh, you haven't checked it in a little while?
I haven't checked it since this morning. Oh, yeah,
I'm sure
that
people are starting to... Okay, I'm looking through the rules right now, and there's nothing in setup that says remove things according to a two- or three-player game.
Well,
the only thing that says in 2-3-player game is you block off certain portions of the district so you can't build your houses in that spot.
I mean, this is great podcasting, but...
Oh, it's fantastic.
At the same time, I want to...
We want to know. We definitely want to know. I promise you this. I will pour over the rules one more time, and before the next podcast, I will check back in with you, and I will let you know if I goofed something up. But I don't think I did. That's Tentacle Town. If anybody out there listening has played Tentacle Town and they realize what we did wrong, or they had a very different playing experience, I would definitely like to hear about it. The other thing that in the game is that your actions are multiplied. Depending on the action or task, is multiplied by the number of houses in the district, of your houses in the district, or number of residents in the district. So if the residents start dying off, then you don't get as many actions as you could normally take there. And so that's another thing that can happen. You don't get as many things because residents are dying. And like I said, you can try to protect the residents if you want to, but you have to have harpoons to protect them.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a harpoon deficiency in the game, is what I'm saying.
Typical Kickstarter.
That is probably that's the canned response that you get from most anybody. Like, well, what do you expect from a Kickstarter? Now, this
I think there's something there.
There has to be something here. This
even if it's like errata too, because there might be something.
Oh, possibly there could be. Anybody else have anything to declare before we move on to the meat of the podcast? We're good to go. Let's do it.
I'm good. Yeah.
We got our backup
song. I still can't get over the fact that I thought that it was you. I thought these were all recorded by you when I first heard the podcast. So for years, I was just like, man, yeah. I think the first time I went to your house is when I was like, so where's your guitar? And you're like, what? I was like, it's your guitarist. You're like, no, that's not me. It was just, you know, a friend of ours. I was like, oh.
Oh, the riffs. Yeah, the riffs I paid for.
Yeah, plus you're an 80s child, so it'd be a synthesizer.
Oh, exactly. It would be a keytar. Yeah. I'd be the keytar riffs, you know, power chords and keytar stuff. Okay, well, let's get on to the meat right now. So as we mentioned in the intro, we want to talk about long games, deep games, games that are quite the opposite of fillers or one-hour wonders. So these are the types of games where you set aside at least a half a day and break out the really good snacks or barbecue, if you're over at Daryl's place, or even my place, to be honest with you, which I've done before with one of the games that we'll talk about pretty soon. But these are the main event games. So before we even get started, like I mentioned a little bit, teasing in the beginning where I said it's 3+ hour games, but that was just a arbitrary length of game that you could play. But how do we define event games truly before we get into this discussion? Because is there a set time amount for play? Does somebody have a feeling about what an event game actually means?
To me, an event game is like you have to plan that game in advance. There's no everyone's coming over and you're like, oh, we want to play. Cool. You want to play Arkham? All right, cool. Let's play Arkham. Like, no, it's like, hey, we're going to play Arkham tonight. Everyone plan to play Arkham tonight. Everyone come play Arkham tonight or Firefly or, you know, anything that's like that, a massive, it's, you can play filler games while the main game is getting set up. That's what filler games are invented for.
And sometimes between turns in the main game.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So to me, that's what it is. I think you have written down 2.5 hours. Yeah. Anything two plus hours to me is an event game.
So two plus for you would be your cutoff. You would be anything longer than 2 hours. What about you, Timothy? Yeah.
I think definitely time is a big thing. Mm-hmm. The only exception to that is like if I want to play something that requires like 12 people. That I could consider an event game too.
Yeah, that's true.
But like it might not, you just have like it all, but that also has to be something just slightly better than a party game. Right.
Well, like for instance, so we just brought up Welcome To. At conventions, they have these events where they say, hey, come and play Welcome To with like 20 or 30 people.
Yeah, and that's not to me, and like technically that's an event,
right?
But it's not an event game. It's just like, oh, that's a spectacle.
Yes.
What I mean in that case is I like when I went to the convention and I played my first mega game,
yes,
and you've got like 32 people all playing different countries and like making up things. That's an event. Like, that's definitely an experience kind of game. And
or Panic on Wall Street.
Or, yeah, Panic on Wall Street. But it just requires it to be just a bit above a party game, so that when you're getting everybody together to play it, you gotta stop and you gotta explain the rules,
right?
And then everybody plays and they're ready for it.
If at least one meal has to be encompassed in the time it takes to play the game, it's an event game.
Well, that is for sure. Yes,
I think that's definitely a definition of that.
Well, I put on here for a little bit more of a clarity, for at least for me, is like, because there are longer Euros. There are definitely Euros that take like over 2 hours to play. But do you really feel like they're truly event games? Like Puerto Rico, you would play like, you know, sometimes it'll take you 2.5 hours to play Puerto Rico. But do you feel like that's an event game? Like you need to plan ahead of time if you're going to play Puerto Rico?
Yeah, I do. Okay. I'd also throw Agricola on that list. Agricola takes a long-ass time to play. I don't care how many times you play
it. It's true. Game. It'll take a little while.
Yeah, and I wouldn't put them on the list. Even the Great Western Trail, I wouldn't put on the list, because even though it is like...
It's not a two-hour game.
It's a little bit over two hours, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that it is. All right,
we're talking to the guy who played Alien Frontiers in 15 minutes, so whatever. But he didn't play it right in 15 minutes.
No, but But at the same time, I don't think that or these qualify for me.
Yeah.
Just because I would play those without having to have an event, right? Like K-less, I'd be like, hey, it's a K-less day. But like it could be a K-less brunch, and it wouldn't be a night. It didn't have to be a night.
Yeah, well, see, I think I tend to agree with you that I wouldn't lump most of those into as event games. Because I put on here, I said, I feel like they have to have great immersion, too. Like, for me. Now, I'm not saying that Euros can't be immersive, but a lot of the ones that I listed or I feel like that I want to plan a game day around or a night or whatever is going to be slightly more immersive and, I guess, in that way, kind of more story-oriented or something that happens other than just simply... Euro type mechanics, if that makes sense. But I guess what we're saying here is that each of us have slightly different criteria for what we feel like is an event game, but mostly we can probably agree that it has to be something that lasts a while to play.
I think so.
And then you make a point to, and I think this is probably, is again for the event games, you make a point to mention, say like, hey, well, you might say, well, you're like, well, let's just play Kalis, but you might mention beforehand when people are coming over, it's like, hey, I got Kalis. You know, so whereas some of these other event games, you would be like, hey, I've got Arkham Horror, and they should know what they're in for. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
It's, you can't really spring these games on people. You can't. They have to be pre-planned. They have to be.
I think so. I think at least the ones we're going to. So let's then mention some games.
I mean, exceptions are, if you're, like, if you're crashing at my place, then it's like, hey, let's play Puerto Rico. Sure, you're not going anywhere. We're here. Let's play Puerto Rico, kind of thing. So yeah,
and we're being relaxed about this. We're not being like, because some people will be like, every game is actually a worker placement game, and we're not doing that.
No,
like,
we're not.
Not every game is an event game just because we want it to be.
Right.
But they're all trying.
They all are trying. They all want to be an event game.
Every game is an event, guys.
Well, then let's talk about the ones we feel like are truly event games. What we would classify as event games. Now, I got a list of things on here. I think we can all agree that, like, my first two, there's no argument. Arkham Horror and Twilight Imperium are event games. At least Arkham Horror 2nd Edition. Third Edition plays a little faster. Eldritch Horror plays faster because it's so streamlined. But I think that Arkham Horror 2nd Edition is literally an event game. People need to know you're going to play that game, because it's not only is it immersive, but it's going to take a little while to play, even though Richard always says, I will be done in an hour and a half. And with Richard, you usually are.
Yep.
But that is an exception to the rule. And if you ever get a chance to play Arkham Horror, we've mentioned this before. If you get a chance to play Arkham Horror with Richard Lonnie, it is an event game, because you want to be in that event.
Any game that has a rich story theme element to it, you want to play with Richard.
Absolutely. Period. Yes. Yeah, it's hilarious. But Arkham Horror and definitely Twilight Imperium. Twilight Imperium is my pure definition of an event game, because everybody has to know what they're in for. They have to begird their loins. Third edition, of course, was like a 9-10 hour affair.
Pregird.
What's that?
Pregird.
Pregird their loins.
You got to pregird.
You got to pregird their loins, because again, it's a third edition would have been a 9 or 10 hour affair. Some people can play faster, but fourth edition even is pretty good. So it's like pretty streamlined, about 4 or 5 hours of play, but still, that's a good chunk of change.
Pretty streamlined.
It's pretty streamlined. It is pretty streamlined. It's got that going for it. I also mentioned Warhammer, which is kind of cheaty, but it's true. Although,
but you could even put Blood Bowl in there because Blood Bowl takes a while.
Yeah, Blood Bowl takes a while. Yep. Absolutely.
Although some people will probably be like, oh, no, that game takes like 45 minutes.
Yeah, well, these are people who play like every day in a league or something. I mentioned Rebellion, Star Wars Rebellion, simply because it's one of those games that it doesn't take as long as some of these other ones do, but it's one of those immersive ones that you want to devote some time because it's immersive. The story is emergent as you're playing through the thing. Firefly, Daryl already mentioned, and Mansions of Madness and Lord of the Rings Journey. All those things like
The Journey into Middle Earth.
Journey into Middle Earth.
Yeah, the whole minute. The new ones. They run the same engine. That's why they're on the same line.
Yeah.
So the ones you need the iPad. Yeah.
And those can be short, though. Like, even though they could be. But they are spectacles no matter what.
Well, it's like there's a couple of the Mansions of Madness ones will last you 3 hours or more. But there's a couple that you can play within an hour. But, you know, it, generally speaking, though, it's enough where you have to say this to somebody, hey, we're going to play some Mansions of Madness, and they have to be ready for it. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. I put, and this might be up for discussion, Pandemic Legacy.
I don't think it's up for discussing. I was going to try to figure out what Legacy game to put in there, and I couldn't think of one.
Yeah, but it's a good choice.
But I don't think alone it is. I don't think if you just sat there and played one game, but, like, you usually, in those cases, don't play one game.
Right. Well, you try to have the same group, and then you have to make a time to play it. I mean, unless you did like what we did when I came over, where we just binged it over 2.5 days.
And that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, that really is.
I mean, it's not like Time Stories. Like Time Stories, it's not like you're going to sit and binge and binge and binge and binge and binge. You can play one chapter of that and go, I'm done. Like it's...
Yeah, and you can save your progress in Time Stories if you want.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they built the inserts to save the progress, so...
Yeah, Time Stories is an interesting...
I'd put Time Stories on my event, though.
Yeah.
Just because I would want to play the whole... I like playing the whole thing in one sitting.
Yeah, so do I. Okay.
But maybe not. I can see why not. Oh, but did we say Demacher yet?
I didn't.
Oh, okay, yeah. Demacher.
So there's an example of a quote-unquote Euro that is... You got to have an event for that one.
Yeah, and people who have not tried it, like... Yeah, if you're ready for the event, you're going to have a really fun time playing this stupid game.
Yeah.
And it is like 4 or 5 hours the first time you play, and some versions of it have 5 players, which seems just stupid for a game that already takes like 4 or 5 hours. But it's one of those games that's extremely important for game designers to play. Like, I would say it's one of those top 10 you as a game designer need to play this game to understand how coalitions work,
right,
and how an event game functions. Because, man, that game requires cooperation on a level that games that are competitive do not do and still don't, and I'm still catching up to it. But the only reason my games are better than Demacher is because Demacher takes like 5 hours to play, and only like one of my games takes closer to that.
I've never played it.
Yeah, I think it's worth it, and I would have to learn the rules again to play it. And the other one I put on there.
One of the last games you told me I had to play, I ended up hating and wanted to punch you in the face at the end of it. That was Tigris and Euphrates.
Wait, did I say that? No, it couldn't have been me.
Yeah.
No.
That was you. That was you.
It couldn't have been
Prescott.
Me. That's
Prescott, you and I played it. You and I played it over.
Oh.
Prescott, that was so good time. Remember conventions, guys? Remember
yeah, conventions.
Touching each other. Like,
what?
You know, buying each other drinks.
Touching each other? Like, there's one that's out of context.
It's okay. You didn't mean anything by it. You just meant anything below the belt.
Yes, got it.
What was innocent the other one you were going to mention, though?
I was just going to say, I want to clarify.
Okay.
Because I don't want to be called someone that likes Reiner Knizia, because that's like a bad word. I will say that I did do that, but I also did it with ulterior motives because I was trying to get someone to play. And we needed at least another person to play. But yeah, that was not
how
fun.
How good of a friend I am.
That was another reminder for me of like,
yeah, there you go.
You're welcome.
There you go. So in addition to like something like Demacher, I wanted to put on Melissa, which I just thought of, it was diplomacy.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So diplomacy is one of the, like a definitely an old school event game. I mean, matter of fact, you know, some conventions are just about diplomacy, so you have to really dig into that and devote a long time because you got negotiations and it's got some complex moves and things to it. In that same fashion, speaking of PressCon, like Daryl just brought up, there's a lot of these immersive war games that are have to be event games because they're played like over the entire week that people are at PressCon.
Yeah, we're not being nice about that, but yeah, games that we don't actually play.
Right, we're not grognards. I mean, I'm probably the closest out of all three of us, but
we don't need jeweler's loops and tweezers to move our game components.
What is the... I can't even remember the name of the game now. It's escaping me, but it's the one that you play as five different factions of Europe over the course of, like, the game. It's, like, 5 hours long. Medieval Europe.
Oh, I see.
I want to call it Wish You Were Here, but I know that's not right. And but it's kind of like For the People or something like that, where it's these larger games kind of condensed, but are still event
games. They're still event games, yeah, because you have to devote the time to play them. You're right. I mean, there are some of these that are kind of war games that are condensed. Like, well, I even mentioned Axis and Allies. Axis and Allies still... Some people can play Axis and Allies in a couple of hours, but normally you're going to be sitting playing Axis and Allies for half a day.
Yeah.
We used to play like that in Fortress America back in the day, and I'd have a little game table that rolled under my bed, and so we'd pause and come back to it like the next day or something like that over a weekend.
Did we mention Mega Civ?
You mentioned Mega Games, okay. But we didn't necessarily...
Like Mega Civilization, any Civilization game, and any railroad games.
Well, that's why I put Railways of the World on here, because there's a lot of people who dedicate their time for Railways of the World. The first time I played Railways, I was like, oh, I get this. And then it lasted like 3.5 hours, and I was like, holy moly. I didn't realize we were going to be sitting here playing this game. And that was not an event either. That was at a game day. I was at a game day, and somebody said, hey, do you like rail games? I'm like, sure, I like trains. And so we sat down and it's like, okay, I'm going to explain Railways of the World. I'm like, okay, I get this. And 3.5 hours later, I'm like, holy moly, where'd the day go? What has happened to here?
I like trains.
Oh, I love TC, trains. TC, what's the old game that we played at PressCon with like the bust figurines?
Wait, did we play?
It's like one of your favorite covers.
Well, we played that at your house.
That's
right?
At your house. That's the one that I got. Power Barons.
Power Barons.
Yes.
No, this was at PressCon. It was a different one. But box like this. It was like an older one that you've been wanting to play, and you keep taking it everywhere, and we finally played it.
When I wasn't in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You weren't in it. It was just
Imperial.
Imperial. 2035 or whatever it is. What is the name of it?
Well, that's the newer version.
Oh, I thought you... Oh, you all played the old one.
I thought you both.
Played
it.
Yeah.
Well, of course you did. You want to play them. No, but...
That was
12 hours. It was sort of an event learning how to play that game, but like at the same time... We could have got the time down, and also it was at least interesting.
Sure. Yeah.
All I know is that I think I was in a playtest with Keith for Santa's Workshop while you were there.
Yeah.
So I missed out on Imperial. One of these days, well, maybe 10 years from now, we'll play it again.
I wouldn't exactly say you missed out on Imperial.
You missed out. These are great. What an event.
there are a few others that we could probably bring out and mention but let's move on, because right now it's time to talk about my father's work.
Do you have a sound button?
Patty, the main sponsor behind this episode of the State of Games.
I do have... Hold on, I do have...
Yeah,
you set the mood. So, the reason why my father's work popped up is because I wanted to ask you again. We've talked about this before. We want to mention on the podcast. Do you consider My Father's Work an event game? And if so, how much time should people expect?
Can you softball that me for a little? Can you like rephrase that in a way that's even more of a softball lob? Like,
is it an event game?
Being we mentioned that Edge of Madness, Lord of the Rings, my Fantasy Flight games need a technical device to be able to play the game, but those are considered event games because of the table presence and amount of time to play. Would you say because My Father's Work uses technology to also implement its gameplay, that it would fall in the same category of the amount of time as well as table presence as those iconic classics?
That's pretty good.
Thank you, Daryl.
Very nice.
Could you compliment me also while you do that? Just do it again, but like compliment me as well. You know, that's a great question. And the answer is completely yes. I would say it stands tall with the other classics of the event game genre. If you've tried any of the event games that we've listed, you'll love
My Father's Work.
If you liked any of them, you'll love My Father's Work.
What is the average beginning game time clocking in at now?
Oh, so before I answer that question, I'm going to double back because Daryl said earlier that he had never played this one and playtested it, and I just want to clarify that this game has been to four unpubs.
Oh, no.
Four unpubs.
I haven't played it since it's been signed, and all the work's been going on.
Okay.
Supposedly. Okay. I have a feeling it's up there with this Canadian girlfriend, and it's just, you know...
This is an established publisher. This is Renegade Game Studios. This is serious shit.
I know Scott Gata. I can call him up and verify this.
I can verify it right now because I've heard about My Father's Work every day for two... The whole time you've been here is my roommate, but even longer than that, but still, yeah.
No, and yeah, just... having to struggle through like the COVID and everything to just try to write, you know, and get things done for this. Yeah. It's a big game, and it's seriously just like that. I mean, the first game that you're going to play of this, I always say, you know, depending on how many players you're doing, you're looking for like 3 to 4.5 hours on your first play. And that, I mean, there's a lot of things that go into that. Like, why some people play slower than that. I mean,
yeah,
you
absolutely
could get to 5 with a teach, right? And most of my first plays at Unpub and playtest and stuff have run around like 4 hours.
Right.
And I'm not lying about that to try to like either inflate it or deflate it.
Exactly. You're just being honest as to where it stands.
Being honest, like, most of my games have been 4 players. And that's unusual in most cases just because of that. Mm-hmm. But it's because, you know, you're at Unpub, you want to get as many people as possible, especially for a game like that. It's an event game. And so people who sign up to play it are usually like, I want to play that, and I will literally devote my much time to it.
And they have to know they're going to devote that much time for it. Yeah.
Which I think is, like, to anybody that did playtest it, thank you for free money. I mean, you donated your time and energy, and I didn't have to pay you anything. So you're all suckers.
I just want to go on record, and this is why I'm doing it here awkwardly on recording and in the podcast room here, that if I am not involved in a beta or playtesting of this before it comes out, I am going to boycott it. And
well, no, but it might be cool because now we can finally get to the point where I have...
Yeah, he has a playtest copy. Exactly.
With, like, the pieces, right? And that's not to say that, like, the Kickstarter is one of those things. We don't really need the support. We really do need the actual support because the thing for this Kickstarter is it's kind of a proof of concept for, like, continuing in this vein.
Correct.
Yeah. Because Renegade Games, this is
like, the biggest thing they've ever done.
Yeah, biggest thing they've ever done by far. And I don't even feel bad saying that, right? Like, it's just, it takes them outside of their comfort zone. And this is a testing ground for...
But paves the way for other things like this.
Yeah, and with the amount of... I mean, we're getting outside of this, but, like, with the amount of love they've put into it, right? Like... There's little glass bottles in this.
The components, as we mentioned last I think you had the copy last... Maybe we didn't have the copy last time. I'll tell you right now, the components in this thing are sick. It's insane. The little bottles that come with it are nuts.
Like little glass bottles. And they don't... They're thick. They don't break or anything. It's just nuts that you're going to get these things. Yeah. Like with a little stop...
And you got little animeeples and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, like different
animals. There's like 20 different animeeples or something.
The Louder House is 100% fully vaccinated, so feel free to bring it out. Let's play.
No, hey, I'm going to take you up on it.
No, I definitely want to play this finished copy and play through, like, at least the Cost of Disease, so we can test, you know, I want to see it. Because, I mean, I haven't played it since you've gotten it into this shape. It's been a long time. So, by the way, for anybody out there listening for the first time, most of you probably have been around and have heard about my father's work, but I'm going to describe it really quickly so that TC doesn't get too far into it.
We're not going in circles.
Right. So My Father's Work is a worker placement game that also involves a storyline, and it's told over three generations.
Pause. Is he paying you to talk about his game for him?
No, but
he's right there.
I'm going to do it because it'll be faster if I do it. And okay, also, it'll be fresh because we've covered My Father's Work several times beforehand. Anyway, it is a Victorian mad scientist game that is told over three generations, three different generations of fathers or daughters, or sons or daughters, taking up their father's work, and you're trying to basically progress a masterwork, if you will, let's say a time machine or something like that, all the way from three generations to finish it out at the end. Now, you can, of course, you're doing other, you know, subordinate experiments and crazy, you know, mad scientist Victorian things throughout the game. You have to balance your
insanity and angry mob.
Yes. So anyway, it's got all of the basic kind of, you know, the archetypes and the genre and the feel of this kind of Victorian mad scientist Frankenstein.
That's Frankenstein.
So throughout this worker placement, but it also has divergent storyline. So there are different modules that come with the game, and each individual choices that you're making along as a group will then affect the storyline and how your gameplay and how your actual game will progress in this. And so since it's divergent, even though you might know the storyline all the way through, or a set storyline all the way through, it can be very different every time you play it. And even the ending, the ending that you get out from the end of the entire game. Now, I've missed a few details.
No, that's fine. Like, there's a flippable game board that flips to different pages.
Right. Yes.
The storybook is actually an app that plays along with the game, and you click along with it, and it will, like, actually remember your name, your story, everything that you've done, and then it can throw that back in your face with the decisions that you've made and, like branches of the story as you go along. And that plays over three generations, so it stays there for a while. And then I think... What was the last thing I was going to say? Oh, yeah, I was going to quote some things. There's over 60,000 words per scenario, over 350 different passages, and the odds of playing the same game twice or something for the first one, the Cost of Disease is something in like 1.5 trillion to 1.
It's pretty
something
impressive.
Like that. So you can replay this game is what I'm trying to say, and you can even though there are more than one scenario, you can replay this game. And I'm on this podcast. This is our podcast, so I can tell you truthfully, I have worked on multiple scenarios for this, and even though I think the campaign will have listed in it one scenario to start, there's like immediate stretch goals for like the first and the second and the third scenarios, but they're coming. There's going to be three in the box. Like, my God, I'm not going to work on this game and put out one.
One, exactly.
So, yeah, so they're coming. And that's kind of a thing. And that's a thing that happens. But like, they'll, as the campaign goes on, though, they're going to reveal more and more about those different scenarios that we have. And the first one is definitely Cost of Disease. And even though that's extremely timely, it just so happens to be because I've been working on it for like 6 years.
One of the first ones you did, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And now it's weird. It's because you're right. It's all about plague
and it works with, it was like Leslie was working on
Yellow Fever
game, and that's what this one's about. It's about Yellow Fever. And it just so happens that correlates really, really
It's very
pretty much
topical,
one-to-one
yes.
with things that are going on. So, relive that lovely experience in my father's
well,
work.
I mean, like we talked about this in the podcast too, in the one about One Quiet Night, when all this started last year. We were like, people were like turning to play Pandemic, and some people were saying like, well, they didn't think that that was appropriate, but then people were like, no, it's totally appropriate. It's like, yeah, and then so anyway,
it's a thing. I mean, if it's too soon, I understand.
I don't think
just
it's too
grab
soon.
A different box.
It's too
game,
soon right? to talk about yellow fever, which was 150 years ago. But
click on a different story if it's too soon. Like you've got other ones to choose from.
Yeah, it's true.
But for me, it's like this one. I've just been working on it for a long time, and so I think we wanted to do something special about it because of all the cool stuff. But yeah, that's a good summary. I think that's a good summary. Yeah,
I think so.
I mean, it doesn't hit all the flavor points that I want to, you know, it's like I can't sell this to everyone because of that, but
well, who do you think you couldn't sell it to then?
Well, I think this is the best game that's ever been made by anyone ever and is appealing to everyone at all.
Yes,
at all skill levels.
Absolutely at all skill levels. Anyone, we're talking about this is why we brought up as an event game.
if you've played Twilight Imperium, like a handful of times, this game is right up your alley. So that's why it's appealing to everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it's also easier than Twilight Imperium.
Yeah. Well, hey, it is actually easier.
It is
than
easier
Twilight
than Twilight Imperium.
That's good.
So
that's
marketing question.
Yeah.
How do you, as a marketing, I mean, obviously going to be selling a game, do you have a demo version or something set up for conventions? Has that been planned? Because how, like, typically with games, like, most of the time if it's a longer game, you don't see many demos run. It's like, oh, let's do a turn, but a turn isn't really going to satisfy or teach people what really My Father's Work's all about. So what is your plan to help market this?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
So what we have available for people. So at the beginning, we're going to have some previews. Man vs. Meeple is going to do, I think, a live play coming up very shortly. Mm-hmm. Now, again, we're waiting on the final electronic app to be usable. Unfortunately, the date of the Kickstarter is not going to be something that people can like click through or anything.
Yeah,
all of that's going to be kept under wraps, but like they'll have at least pictures of what the final app's going to look like. And they'll be playing through the final writing of The Cost of Disease, which I've already done. And we've already, like, you know, gone back and forth over, like, getting it right. I mean, there's more to do, of course, right? But,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, everything's in place for at least that scenario. So we're going to play that whole scenario. We're going to let that be part of the marketing so that people can at least see what's inside there or at least get an idea without too many spoilers. But like yeah,
but
even
but like you mentioned before, it's not truly spoiling it.
No, but you know, some people like to go in these things like
blind.
If they're like story.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I don't want to watch anything.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And I can get that. Mm-hmm. So like, there'll be spoilers if you want them. But again, it's only one path that they'll take through their game, and there's at least 8 endings in each one of the scenarios, and so in each one of those is variable anyway. So mm-hmm. it's a lot of game. And what I've heard now, and I'm going to just say it because I could be wrong and it doesn't matter, but the Kickstarter is on 4/27. So April 27th. We'll repeat later, I'm sure.
Yes.
But the price is going to be $99. And that is super good for
everything you're getting in that box.
I don't know how they're doing that at that price, but whatever. I think knowing what I know about what's in that box, I would definitely get it.
It's worth every penny for what's in that in the box that you see right now.
And I think honestly, is like we're talking. Hey, event games. So like one of the things about event games that you get into is. To have an event game, like, it's kind of nice to go a little bit all out. And there's minis. There's, like,
well, here's the thing.
Pieces.
Just to talk about it in the context of other event-type games, when people... So we found in through market research now, and this is we're going to get a little bit more into this in a minute. Market research has seen a growth in the smaller games, like $20 games.
Mm.
And then these big box games. that people were like, they when they pay for something and it's got a lot of stuff in it, they feel like, okay, I'm getting my money's worth because it's got a lot of stuff in it. So we've seen the biggest growth in the industry from the small $20 games, $20 to $30 games, not so much in the middle with the $50 and $60 games. Those have been either staying the same or slightly stagnant and have dropped some, which again is all, you know, trends in the industry. But now people aren't shying away from paying $100 for a game. And they shouldn't, because most of the ones, like, so for instance, you know, My Father's Work, or I'm going to speak for Twilight Imperium because I love that game. But if you know kind of what you're getting in Twilight Imperium and you buy that box and it's big and you open it up and there's all this stuff in it, and you're like, yeah, I'm getting my money's worth out of it. You know, that's a decision. And that was one of my questions, which we can return to your point in one quick second. But a lot of people have started to say, like, publishers more and more are saying, like, well, let's have sleeker and faster games. But there's still that market, in my personal opinion, for people who seek out those event games, those 3+ hour games, those big box games, the ones that are immersive and give you all kinds of gubbins to play around with. Anyway,
you mentioned like the big box retails and all this stuff, and that's actually a really good thing, because I feel like these event games are actually what's keeping this whole hobby community of board gaming a hobby community. Because you're seeing more and more, like, Ticket to Ride and all that stuff is showing up on Target. And there's publishers out there that are trying to get into Target, especially now with the pandemic. Like, yeah, they're trying to get their games to big box retailers. But you're not going to see a $100 board game on a Target board game shelf. Target's never going to ever want to put that up there. So this is, like, where the hobby market comes back into play. It's, oh, I need to get this game. I know I have to go to a friendly local game store or online through the publisher themselves. Like, it's – and I think these are the games that are helping the smaller retailers and, like I said, helping feed this hobby versus just, oh, look what I picked up at Target. Look at, like, Pan Am's at Target, you know, and stuff like that. It's like, clearly there's a push by Asmodee to get crap into Target. And it's, yeah.
Let's be clear that Pan Am is not crap. Daryl meant crap as in stuff.
No.
He just meant stuff.
Just crap is stuff.
I know. Yeah. I'm just clarifying.
Games at Target. They're quality games at Target.
Yeah, yeah. No, I totally get what you're saying. Yeah, but,
like,
I think you're
entry
right.
Level versus, yeah. Entry level versus, you know, true gamers.
Real gamers.
Real gamers. No, but entry level versus, like, the connoisseur gamer. But I totally agree with that. Like, and this is the thing I was talking about, like, in game design in general, most of the time, is saying complexity sometimes for the sake of complexity is good, because it gets somebody to cross over into that land of, like, oh, there's something else to this. I wonder what else there is. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people say, like, a gateway game is like, oh, Uno's a gateway game. And I'm like, No. Uno's a game that you can play with your family, and yeah, it's a game, but it's not like, it's not making you go, wow, this Uno game.
I
wonder what this Gloomhaven box is.
Right, yeah.
Like, doesn't, there's an in-between, and that's where the gateway to, like, addiction happens.
Oh, hey, speaking of event games, you just mentioned Gloomhaven. We put it on our list, but go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I guess we didn't put Gloomhaven.
Yeah, we should have put Gloomhaven on there, sorry.
But that's fine.
What's Gloomhaven?
Oh, you know that game.
Oh, that game.
It's like Welcome to.
Oh, yeah, that game. But, oh, actually, that brings up, there's Gloomhaven, but then there's a mini version of Gloomhaven.
Oh, yeah, Jaws of the Lion. Target. Yeah, that's in Target.
So see,
yeah.
Case in point, you're not going to see main Gloomhaven in Target.
Well, the Jaws of the Lion was a very smart move, to put that into Target and get it in people's hands that, again, is more streamlined gameplay, but then allows them to see, now I can move up to Gloomhaven, whereas at Gloomhaven, it's big. You know what I mean? It's a big box, a lot of stuff, lots of story. This is what we're talking about, an event game. Very much the feel of My Father's Work with, you know, kind of that story and branching, you know, divergent. Not quite... Yours has more depth to it, story-wise, but...
Yeah, individual games are going to be, like, more specific.
Correct.
And I think that's the thing, like, there is, like, a difference between all these event games. And usually the event games that, like, last have, like, one or two things that are specific. And I'm hoping that My Father's Work kind of eases into there, because you're getting that branching storyline within one game. As
right.
opposed to playing, like, a campaign
or
like a legacy
right.
thing.
Right.
But I see that with, like, Gloomhaven. Like, No, each game's kind of 80 minutes, you know? Like, it's not, like, overwhelming.
You still have to... it is one of the games where you want to devote a day, because you probably want to play two of them, so you're going to take some time.
You want to play it more.
Yeah, exactly. So, but you're right. My Father's Work is that one cohesive, you got to play through this, because this is the story that we're playing.
So, do you guys believe in the whole... the best, like, legacy or epic game would be a game that's, like, 20 minutes long, but you play it over and over and over and over and over again?
Well, that was Risk Legacy.
What, is it 20 minutes long?
Each one was, like, maybe 20, 30 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it wasn't very long to play each individual sections of Risk Legacy. From what I remember, it's been a long time since I played it, but I don't remember... I mean, I remember playing, like, maybe two rounds. It took you, like, maybe an hour and a half if you played two games. Hmm. Yeah, it was pretty short. And, I mean, but some of them were short because of the decisions you made, and some of them were a little bit longer because of, you know, things that happened in the game or just people's gameplay. But me personally, as an event player, like, I thought the Pandemic Legacy that we played, like, when we binged it when I went to Daryl Leslie's over those two games was perfect for me, because each individual game of Pandemic was fairly long, like maybe about an hour, maybe a little bit over an hour, depending on that. But then as you play them, you string them along into, like, the 12 months of the year, now you've got a huge epic thing that you're playing. My personal opinion, though, is I personally like games like My Father's Work, like Twilight Imperium, where you sit and you play one game 5 hours.
Okay, yeah.
And that's just me. I mean, I loved what we did with Pandemic Legacy, but you got to dedicate that and binge it like you're watching a series on Netflix. Whereas with this, you can sit down and play one full game in, like, you know, 4 or 5 hours, and it's epic, but it's all self-contained. So it's like watching Gone with the Wind versus... Falcon and Winter Soldier. That's not a good comparison, but, you know, at the same time, you know, you sit down and you watch an epic movie that lasts a good long time, or even, you know, a mini series is like 2 or 3 episodes versus like a long series that you go through. It's just different, you know, episodic things. I just like the big chunk. That's my opinion.
I agree with you.
All right, so you guys like Braveheart and and hate like Gettysburg, or hate Shogun.
What's wrong? Wait,
no.
What's wrong with Gettysburg?
I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out what is a mini series that goes that.
Oh, like, you know, North and South.
North and South. That's what it is. That's what's Northwest. That's Hitchcock.
Yeah, North and South. Sure, there's nothing wrong with a good little mini series, but I like the big epic mm-hmm. movies. Well, and I even mentioned that at the end of this one. Like, I got, like, a good book or an epic movie is something that's immersive. You don't care how long it is. You just want to enjoy the journey while you're there and immersed in it. And I think that's the benefit of event games and why I'm really excited for people to experience My Father's Work. So I'm excited to experience My Father's Work again because, like I said, I've got this cool prototype.
Well, I'll never be excited to... to play My Father's Work, because I know
everything. You know everything, exactly. So you want to watch other people excited and playing it so you can see their reaction, because you know everything that's in it.
Yeah.
So it's one of those tough things to do. Anything else you want to say about My Father's Work?
Yeah. Oh, so much. Yeah, it's just been a long time. And, you know, for me, it's like, there's been a lot of misfires over the years for me for, like, different games. So I'm just crossing my fingers that this one goes well, Kickstarter goes off and does gangbusters, like, feel good about myself for once, and don't go, you know, fall into a crippling depression. And caused by people who don't listen to this podcast and purchase a copy of My Father's Work on Kickstarter, because that would cause me to fall into a deep depression. And I would know exactly who, and that would be the listener.
Yes,
that did not back my.
So what he's saying, basically,
responsible for that.
What he's basically saying is he knows who listens to this podcast, and if he doesn't see your name on the backer list,
the thing is, I will be following this podcast and every listen that we get for it. And if for some reason, I look at the internet address.
Oh,
the internet
IP
address does not match the Kickstarter, and then those numbers. I will send a personal email.
Okay, let's be clear to everybody if they're listening right now. We do not track IPs with this podcast. It is not possible.
Chris, come on.
Really, seriously, it's like, if you're out there listening and this sounds interesting and you like these types of immersive games, please go check out my father's work. Watch TC's and Renegade's Twitter feeds. I'll be retweeting as well, but watch TC and Renegade's Twitter feeds, Puppet Shogun and Renegade Games, for when the promo videos launch. They may have already been launched by the time you listen to the podcast. And, of course, we'll be updating throughout the time it's on Kickstarter for the campaign itself. But, you know, he mentioned on the previous podcast that it has... We've talked multiple times about that young Frankenstein feel, where it really embraces the joy of that Victorian Gothic type of horror, but at the same time doesn't take itself overly serious.
Well, it takes itself overly serious.
Is there a tap dancing monster? Put it on the rat.
See, this is the thing, right? Like, yeah. So young Frankenstein's a good corollary for it, because it's like, this is real,
right?
But also there's some funny, just inherently funny things about the surreal qualities of being a mad scientist. And yeah, it leans into that, but it, like, I try so hard to get everybody on board to just play it straight. Stop, no wackiness, just stop with the wackiness, play it straight, be Victorian. And hopefully everyone will feel that, and they'll get that sense of it from the writing, from everything. I mean, oh, that's a weird one. I didn't even bring that up. But the writing is different from a different perspective for each
module.
The scenarios. So one's like Dracula, where it's got like the letters, and another one's like a historian, and another one's like, yeah, different. So, so even that happens. So, yeah. Hey, let's go to the
You want to go to the back side of the podcast? Hey, let's do that. Okay. That was... I recorded that during my blues period.
Dude, I feel it every time. Right here. Every time.
I wish I could take credit for that. I used to be able to play the guitar way back in the day. Hey, I don't know if you've heard or not, but there's a Kickstarter coming on April 27th.
It's right at the top.
It's right at the top. And it's called My Father's Work.
As if we weren't just going to be talking about it. That's a good plan.
I know. I just had it on here.
April 27th, probably early afternoon, probably sometime.
Might be 11. Maybe 11 a.m. is usually the regular launch time for most things, but who knows?
Yeah, sometime like that. Just... You'll know if you follow Twitters and stuff.
Exactly.
Check it out.
So be there, unless you have something more important to do, like taking a shower or making a bowl of cereal or breathing.
That's what Daryl added to the notes. I wish that I'm going to have to record it so we can have the recording of Stanley Spadowski going, "Be there." From UHF. That's what I heard when Daryl said that. So as mentioned on the last podcast, by the way, if you've not listened to the last podcast, this was episode 176, or the one about boutique publishing. Go ahead and listen to that. We had Tony Miller and Daniel Newman from New Mill Publishing, or New Mill Industries. And Rivet Heads is on Kickstarter right now. We mentioned on the last podcast. We had extensive information, so go listen to that and check that out on Kickstarter. Nat Levan, you may know him as designer of the wonderful New Bedford from Dice Ape Me Games, has a game up on Kickstarter from publisher Ape Games, and it's One Card Wonder. And this one's been around for a bit. And Daryl has something to say about this.
I'm just, you know, I got a few bones to pick with this one. You know what grinds my gears, guys?
Oh, you know what really grinds my gears?
Yes.
More than one card. I've seen the Kickstarter images. It's kind of weird. It's just like a handful of cards in a box full of cakes. I mean, you know what I'm talking about? It's that's it. No, the thing I'd love to know. I guess I got to talk to Nat. Like, man, I thought this was picked up a while ago, but it could have been from a different publisher.
No, I think it's been with Ape for quite a while. Because Daniel Solis did the graphic design for this, and he hasn't been doing it. This is a while back, so.
Yeah, so it's... I forgot all this game existed until Anna posted, and I was like, what? So.
Well, the good thing about this is only $18 to pledge to get a copy of One Card Wonder. And like I said, this has been around for quite a while. Nat's had this in development even long term before, I think, 8 picked it up. But you can come and check it out on Kickstarter right now. Again, $18, can't beat that. Yep. You're getting more than one card.
That looks solid.
I will say I'm complaining about it, but I backed it immediately, and I'm not, I'm throwing my money at it. So I'm allowed to complain because I'm paying for it.
Well, I mean, it's your it's your lot in life as well. So
that's right. That's right.
In addition to One Card Wonder, speaking of Nat Levan, our friends at Grand Gamers Guild plans to launch Aldabas. Aldabas, the Doors of Cartagena.
No, so Daryl, give a face. So I'll give a little mini pitch, yeah, right? So
it says
if you're a fan of puzzly card games and door knockers, you're in for a real treat. And I think that's a weird way of pitching it. But Aldabas, if you didn't know, is about the door knockers that they have in Cartagena, where every door represents like different, like, I mean, they just have these immaculate door knockers.
They're really cool.
On these places, and it's like it was a tradition to do this, and it's related to like your family and like,
you know, like
the
crests,
groups that you like, yeah. And apparently there's like a lion, so some of these people are furries. But in general, like, yeah, it's like it's cool because they got an actual artist from Colombia.
Yes,
to do the art,
absolutely.
For it.
Yep,
and they did all the doors, and all of them are like separate doors, like with the cool, like authentic mm-hmm. look. And I don't think the artist lives in Cartagena, actually.
But like, I don't know, but it is Colombian.
They could have walked to it. They could have maybe taken a bus.
The artist is Juan David Vargas, and Josh, of course. Josh Capel had some input on some of these things as well, because he does for everything Grand Gamers Guild wise.
Oh yeah.
But yeah. But anyway, it's Nat and co-designed with Josh Mills, which you all recognize that name. He's been on the podcast a couple times and on the Geek All Stars there. Dan, Patrice, you got your plug. Geek All Stars, listen to the Geek All Stars.
that Josh Mills, that guy's up to no good. That Josh Mills guy.
But
no,
hey,
good.
No good.
He's going places, I've heard.
Yeah, he's going places.
That's right.
He's a rising star. Watch out for him.
I got some places for him to go.
All right, so that's all I have on Kickstarter. A lot of it's you know, friends of the podcast. But hey, become friends of the podcast and talk about your Kickstarter. How's that?
that's so lame.
Be our friends, please.
When is this going to... when's this dropping?
This is on May 4th. Tuesday, May 4th.
No,
I don't...
No. What?
Oh, the podcast.
What day is today?
Today,
Chris?
Is... yeah. Well, it's officially 12:01 a.m. on Thursday, April 22nd. But hopefully it'll be dropping either today, Thursday, or Friday. Probably Friday. Probably Friday morning. It'll be the 23rd.
Friday, mm-hmm. You might have a couple hours to check out Sentinels of the Multiverse Definitive Edition. That game's got some great new graphic design.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I didn't put it on the list because I thought this might not come out by the time the campaign ends. But yes, if you do manage to catch it, right, brand spanking new, definitely go check out the last few hours of the Sentinels of the Multiverse Definitive Edition, which has okay graphic design.
Stunning. Stunning new graphic design for an instant old classic.
I want to talk about this so bad, but I feel like it's going to add a whole other hour to the podcast. I have an idea for the next episode.
Okay, sounds great.
What's the
next episode? Here it is first. I think it's the first time we're going to announce the topic of the next episode. We're going to talk about new additions.
Oh, that's okay. Good.
No, that's good.
Yeah, I like that.
That's super good.
Yeah.
And you have a perfect... You texted us a perfect set of pictures for the next podcast, too.
Yes, I did.
As a teaser, yeah.
Yes, I did. But I've lived through what the publisher sees on a new edition, so I can give some insight that those people may not know about.
That's perfect. No, I applaud you, Daryl. It's a good topic. So, hey, join us next time on episode 178, the one about the new edition or a new edition or new editions. We'll figure out the wording.
And you can probably guess what's going to be the soundtrack
song?
For it.
Oh, yeah. It'll be all new edition. It's going to be perfect. All right. Well, you know what? That's it for this episode of State of Games. We'll be back next time with even more great board game discussion. Of course, we love hearing from all of you, so if you want to give us feedback or have any topics or new segments you'd like to hear about, we can add them to the show. Just email thestateofgames@gmail.com or tweet them @thestateofgames. And because of this, if you have an event game we left off, or if there are you don't like event games, just please give us your opinion. We just want you to talk to us. Please talk to us. Be our friends.
Be our friend, especially if you have a Kickstarter coming especially up. Especially Kickstarter. We'll just plug it.
We'll just plug it. All you got to do is just say, hey, I'm a friend of the podcast, and we'll
plug
it.
That's what this one. It shouldn't have been about the main event. It should have been about the friends the that friends. Have Kickstarters, and we can plug them.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, you can also go to DiceHateMe.com and comment on the podcast, or join Guild 1903 on BoardGameGeek.com. Lots of cool discussions happen there. You can also hit me up on Twitter at DiceHateMe and on Instagram. What about you two?
You can find me on Twitter at GetLouder.
And I am Puppy Shogun on Twitter if you want some updates on new things. And I was just on the Boards Alive podcast, so you could check that out as well.
Well, until next time, thanks for listening, and may all your rolls be sixes.
Rolls be sixes. And still socially distanced, people.
There you go.
Where to go to? Why don't you go where passion sits? Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes, or cutaway coat, perfect fits.